gosh. Okay.
Where are we? We're on
127.
Nice. Vedaha. Vedaha. Veda Rupat Twat.
Veda
Rupat Twat. Veda. Veda. Veda Yati Iti Va.
Veda
yati iti. So veda yati iti.
Veda yati iti.
See that? Veda yati iti.
Veda yati
iti. Va
veda. Va
veda. That long E is a E-E, right?
E-E.
Really?
Yeah.
E-E?
Because veda yati is an iti.
Okay.
Veda yati iti. So veda. Veda Rupa Twat, because of being that Twat, right? Because of being, fifth case, because of being Veda Rupa in the form of the Vedas. So, because of being in the form of the Vedas, it's like saying that Vyasa, Vishnu, is the Vedas, right? Because it is the breath of Vishnu, the breath of the Lord, the breath of Ishwara is the Vedas. So, the Vedas are Ishwara. Right, so because of being in the form of the Vedas, Vedayati iti va Vedaha, or another meaning, va means or, Vedayati, the one who makes known, causal, the one who makes one know, that one is also called Veda. So Bhagavan actually is the one who makes you know. So you can take it as the one who gives you knowledge of the Vedas also.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting because the Vedas come from Ishwara, right? They're like the breath of Ishwara, so the Vedas themselves are Ishwara. But they also are the means of knowledge for knowing Ishwara, right? Because without the Vedas, within this, the kind of the Hindu context, the Vedas themselves are really our only means of knowledge for knowing Ishwara. Now when we say the Vedas are our only means of knowledge for knowing Ishwara, it's because the means of knowledge that we have available to us as human beings, like, for instance, pratyaksha, sense perception. Sense perception cannot give knowledge of Ishwara. It can give knowledge of Namarupa. But your eyes can give you knowledge of this creation that is objectifiable by my sense organs. Those are the epistemological limits of our sense organs, are the sense objects. Anumana, inference. In order for an inference to be valid, it has to depend on the initial statement itself has to be true.
Mm.
So the initial statement, again, is going to be in the end dependent upon our sense perception or where it's going to come from, right? But those epistemological limits are confined to what exists within the creation. So inference, presumption, same thing. The difference between inference and presumption, inference would be the relationship is there's a concomitance between the one object and the other. Like, for instance, if I see smoke, that is directly invariably related to fire, which is also there. I just can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
But presumption has that invariable relationship also where there is no other explanation. For instance, if I see in the morning it's all wet outside, right? Nothing else can cause that to happen. And so I can presume that it rained. That's a valid presumption because there's no second thing that could account for that. So that's the means of knowledge, but again, dependent on sense perception. So even anupalabdhi, where I can tell there's no elephant in the room, or that I'm looking for my keys and I can tell that the keys are not here, I'm not seeing that they're not here. Right? This isn't a sense perception. But I can, because of what I do see, I can tell that there are no keys there. There's a jump. That also depends on perception. Comparison, upamana depends on perception. Shabda, the use of words that are based upon knowledge that has already been gained by these other five, also depends upon those means of knowledge. Right? And so none of those means of knowledge can give me knowledge of my own being. So what means of knowledge do I have to give me knowledge of my own being and of Ishwara? So this knowledge, the knowledge that comes from the Vedas, even though once gained, you can't refute them. First of all, you have no means of knowledge to refute them, but they also withstand any logic that you can throw their way, and any logic that you try to give to establish another reality is something that can be easily dismissed. So you can dismiss all other positions, and at the same time, the knowledge that the Vedas reveal to you, some of which is aparoksha jnana. Aparoksha jnana means direct, immediate knowledge because you are here. Mm-hmm. So aparoksha jnana is something which is direct and immediate. The mithya nature of maya is direct and immediate. The ishwartva of your immediate experience is direct and immediate. The infinite extension is something that you can logically make, but it's not direct and immediate. The satya-mitya relationship is direct and immediate. Okay? So, the cyclical nature of the creation, beyond your means of knowledge. The different levels of the creation, beyond your means of knowledge. So it's all Shraddha, faith, Dharma, Punya and Papa. Dharma and Adharma is something that we can establish in many different ways in terms of the results. The immediate, what we call the Drishtapala, the immediate results of our actions. You know, some immediate results of our actions produce pain, some produce shanti and pleasure. So there's a lot that we can say about that. There's a lot of things that we can bring in from all the religions of the world to establish the instinctual truth of the golden rule. Mm-hmm. Right? But that there's punya and papa, which means that there is a moral result, as though a moral result to these actions, punya and papa, that manifests later in terms of your next birth, that there is a next birth. It makes so much sense, but you can't prove that. Mm-hmm. You know, once it's said, then you can have all kinds of anecdotal evidence, and it's something that can make sense to you on an emotional and logical, emotional logical way. But unless you have gone there and come back, or you have Shraddha in somebody who has, for instance, the Buddha that does. The Buddha and Buddhists do not accept the authority of the Vedas. And so that there's reincarnation and all of that is not something that they can even talk about at all, except that the Buddha himself had gone to many of these lokas in his own experience and talked about them, and has said that there is transmigration. He gives his own logic to that. But he affirms that transmigration of the jiva is there, then gives his own logic to it, and he himself having experienced it and gone and visited those other worlds. Okay, so then, that being so, because his devotees and disciples have Shraddha in the Buddha as what we call an Aptapurusha. Aptapurusha means somebody whose word you trust. You know, like say we have Shraddha in Aptapurushas in Vyavahara all of the time, like any textbook that you read or anybody that you take to be an authority on a subject, especially in science it becomes obvious. But you even trust in Aptapurushas, the veracity of a given person who's giving you directions. Mm-hmm. You fall off the do you know the way? And if that person seems like he's a stable, knowledgeable, sane person, then you take his word for it and you fall off. That's what called Aptapurusha. But the point here is that some of what the Shastra has to say, like all of the different lokas, punya and papa, dharma, adharma, giving the punya and papa, transmigration of the jiva, the cyclical nature of the creation, that from its own standpoint, being a conscious being, that the Maya Upadhi itself is known. We can account for that in terms of Satya Mitya. John won't do that right now, but we can account for it as just the reality of Satya, the Satya Mitya relationship, but also thinking that this whole manifest creation is a manifestation of infinite knowledge, similar in a sense to your limited manifestation of knowledge, mm-hmm. right? That the creation is an infinite manifestation of knowledge. This has to be pointed out to you by the Shastra. Once it's pointed out, then you can see it. There's all kinds of logic that can support it. There's also there's drishtantas for it, which is also logically very important that there be illustrations to establish this is, it is like this, just like we have in this here, you know, such a relationship or such an experience. You have to have some sort of a drishtanta. It has to resonate experientially. It has to resonate logically, and it has to hold up to some means of knowledge. And here the Vedas are, I mean, considered the means of knowledge for that. So here, if we say, the one who makes you know, Vedayati is causal. Bhagavan is the Vedas, and being the Vedas, as the Vedas, he is the one who makes you know. So the one who makes you know in reference to the Vedas is the Vedakrit, the one who has made the Vedas, the one who teaches the Vedas. There's another aspect here that will come a little later, but it's also not just the one who makes you know, but the one who is knowing, right? Because the one who is knowing is also Bhagavan. Because what is the message of the Vedas? Is you are that. And so Bhagavan is making you know yourself to be Bhagavan. So Bhagavan is making Bhagavan know that he is Bhagavan. Because there is nothing here that is not Ishwara, but because the plight of the jivas is that they are really an effect of ajnanam. You know, because that makes the ahankara, the ajnanam, self-ignorance, is what causes the ahankara to exist. The ahankara is the I notion. I notion means this me that is me and always has been me, always will be me. From the standpoint of the mind, because of the mind itself is limited, and because the nature of the self in and of itself is not known, the mind being mitya has the atma always for its adhishtana, means the atma is always itself, is its very truth. But that mind has no way of knowing the self from its own standpoint. It only knows the self from its standpoint. And so that means this mutual superimposition will continually be taking place where the mind, which is happy, will say, I am happy. So it takes the I am, which is Brahman, which is the very self of Ishwara, which is the truth, and identifies it with its mental state, or with its perception, or whatever is with the body. If it's identified with the body, then I am the body. The mind takes itself to be the body, you know, like a bouncing ball. So this mutual superimposition is natural to the mind because of self-ignorance, which causes this ahankara. The jiva is Brahman with self-ignorance, giving birth to the ahankara on the part of the mind. In reality, there is no jiva, there is only Ishwara. You are not a jiva. The whole knowledge is you are Brahman. You are Brahman means you are Ishwara. But then the person, I'm not Ishwara, I'm just a jiva. This jiva, there is no jiva. Not really. The jiva is that product of ignorance in the part of the mind, because the body, mind, sense organs really is part of Ishwara. It's like the cell in the body thinking, I'm an independent entity. So no, you're not. You're not an independent entity. You are one entity within this totality of the physical body. And everything that happens to you is governed by the whole. Like that, every jiva is part of the whole, part of the one Ishwara. And so what happens when you gain knowledge, really, is there is a pranam, there is a surrender on the part of the jiva to Ishwara. Means the jiva is offered to Ishwara. Means the ajnanam, the self-ignorance that has caused me to take myself as a separate entity, apart from Ishwara, is removed. So the jiva surrenders to Ishwara. Surrendering to Ishwara, what is the teaching? Is aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman, I am Ishwara. In fact, to be fully completely gain this knowledge, it's I am Ishwara.
Mm-hmm.
But to say I am Ishwara, you can't have an ahankara
mm-hmm.
identified with the body-mind sense organs. This body-mind sense organs is part of Ishwara. I am the very self, which is Ishwara, Atman, which is Brahman. So, when we say the Bhagavan is the Vedas and the Vedas are what give knowledge, that knowledge is going to be taught by the Guru to the Sisha. The Guru is the one who has that knowledge, right? Who teaches us to and realizes Aham Brahmasmi, passes that Vedic knowledge to the Sisha who realizes Aham Brahmasmi. The Vedas themselves realize what Aham Brahmasmi. And so those Vedas that come from Brahman, right, come from the self, know the self, give knowledge of the self, know the self, teach the self, so the whole thing is the Veda. So that's the idea. So the Veda is Veda Rupa taught because of being the very breath of Ishwara in the form of the Vedas, and because of being the very means of knowledge for knowing. The one that makes you know.
I'd like to strengthen it a little bit because I always see the Vedas as a text, and it's not a text.
It's a pramana. Don't think of it as text. The Vedas are a pramana. They're a means, beginningless means of knowledge. And what's the source of that knowledge? It can't be of human origin, which means powder sham. It can't be powder sham, born of Purusha, born of a human being. Because there's no means of knowledge to get you there. Your means of knowledge are limited to within time and space, within the creation. So we say the Vedas themselves are a powder sham. They're not born of a human being. Is something that comes with the creation. And you can say, well, I don't believe that. Well, then you can't really, you don't have the Shraddha. If as you hear that, you say, well, I don't believe that, then you're not somebody who has the Shraddha, which is considered really Ishwara Nugraha, the grace of Bhagavan, to even expose yourself to this teaching, because you're done before you start.
Mm-hmm.
Swamiji uses the example of somebody who's been blind for their lifetime, and they discover that there's an operation that can remove these things called cataracts. But this person has been just blind forever. But there's an operation now that exists to remove them. And the person says, I don't believe that. I don't want anybody messing around with my eyes. So no, I'm not going to try that. And so he's done before he started.
Mm-hmm.
So what if he says, really? Is that true? Is there such a thing? And then they have doubts and whatnot, and finally agrees, okay, I understand, let me try that. So then they do the operation. Now he has to make another decision to open his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But if he opens his eyes, he can see. Right? You have to use your eyes to see. And you have to use the pramana here to see. But to use the pramana, there has to be something inside that makes you willing to use it, right? And this is a jump, because I'm born lifetimes and lifetimes of using these pramanas, so I'm totally willing that I don't even think about it, I just use them.
You always trust them.
Yeah, you trust them. You take them for granted. This pramana you don't take for granted, so what allows you to use this pramana? And unless you use it, you can't see, you know? You can negate it before you use it, but you're negating something you know nothing about and you've never tried it. So that's an interesting situation.
Are the Vedas the only means of pramana?
We can't say that. What you have to understand is that this, when you say it's the only means of knowledge, we're not talking about the world cultures. We're talking about the difference between the pramanas that are available to you as a human being, which I just went through, right? Pratyaksha, Anumana, Upamana, etc.
Right.
The six pramanas, and even the Shabda pramana when it's dependent on the other five pramanas. Shabda as a revealed knowledge, okay? So now, it would be the same, like, say, in Tibet, or China, or Africa, or any of the other world traditions. They're in the same boat, right? Do they have a revealed means of knowledge that is not born of sense perception, or not? It's going to be exactly the same situation, because your sense perception cannot get you there. Now, there's also another problem. Say you say, I had an experience Okay? Mm-hmm. And that experience is knowledge. Now, the problem with that is that experience, say for instance you have a non-dual experience, which anybody can actually have, a meditative experience, non-dual, at that time there's no experience of any type of duality. It's a non-dual meditative experience, no subject-object relationship. But when you come back from that experience, you're going to be defining that experience within a context that you know. And so the problem is when people do have non-dual experiences and you know it's the truth, nobody will tell you, you know it, you know that's the truth, but what that truth is, you don't know. And so often what happens is when you have a non-dual experience or meditative state, the ahankara does not shift. So now your mind, you the mind, and have this non-dual experience, and now you, the mind, are not having that experience, and so you need to have it again. Now the thing is the one who's the most evolved is that mind, that jiva, that has the most non-dual experiences, or the one who stays in the non-dual experience for the longest time.
Notches on the belt.
But actually, that non-dual experience is the very nature of reality itself. And so, in fact, even though your sense organs are functioning and you're in this duality, that non-dual, the non-dual reality is as present as when this duality is not manifest. But for that viveka is necessary. And we worked on that just a little bit in this little short meditation we did at the beginning of the class. You know, where there's an ever-present. The step we have to go from there is proving the mityatva of the world. But if you can recognize that ever-present, changeless, self-evident being that is not in competition or does not need your experiences to be negated for it to be changelessly self-shining. Mm. Your being is not in competition. It's not one or the other. You are always there in exactly the same way. The mind is the one that had not before made that differentiation. Now it's making the differentiation. That's why in the meditation I said, you're awake to it. The mind is awake to that fact. What happens then is the shanti of your own being comes more and more and more to the present from the standpoint of the mind. Right? It's always present. It's always the self-abiding, always there, not ever doing anything at all, but that just becomes something, and the agnanam is removed from the mind more and more, comes forward, that fact comes more and more to the surface. What was always in the surface, as though, comes more and more to the surface, more and more pervasive to your whatever vritti is there.
So that desire to have a non-dual experience is evaporated then, right? And that?
Yeah, it's evaporated completely. Om Swasti Prajabhya Paripalayantam Nyayena Margena Mahim Mahishaha Go Brahmane Vyashubhamastu Nityam Loka samasta sukhino bhavantu, kale varshatu parajanyaha, prithivi sasya shalini, desho yam shobarahitaha, brahmana santu nirvayaha, om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, Sarve bhadrani pasyantu, ma kaschit dukkha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritam gamaya, om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachate, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti
Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha. Hari Om.